This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
Many thanks to Manny Diaz who just joined us. Pro Day today for the Canes. Should be fun. Talked about Duke as well. Dan Bonner joined us last hour. Talked about the ACC's inability on the men's side to have any success whatsoever this weekend. And Wes, it was a ton. I don't know. What's the matter with
really?
You?
Let's just throw it on out there.
Well, it
inability
is.
To have any success whatsoever.
We had two teams on the men's side. They both got smacked. I mean, Syracuse got outplayed by Houston, and Florida State yesterday, you know, decided to give up layups and dunks all day. And none of us are happy about it. We wanted them both to win, make life easier for us. But, you know, when you don't shoot the ball well, neither team did. When you don't defend in the paint, neither team did. That's a recipe against anybody, much less really good teams like teams seeded 1 and 2, to be long days.
Yeah.
And really, Syracuse got smacked, and so did Florida State.
Yeah. The disappointment on the empty side on the men's card is really tough, isn't it? Because you just kind of have this expectation. You said this in hour one, and you're right. We are so spoiled
in
the ACC with basketball.
Yeah.
Oh, spoiled to the point where, like, when you get to this point and you don't have somebody and you're going, you look around like, wait a second.
Hey, what's going on?
They're
going
to be able to finish?
Right.
They're going to finish the event?
Right.
So, yeah, you feel bad for Syracuse. Certainly you feel bad for Leonard Hamilton and Florida State. But at the same time, it brings up a point again. You did this in hour one. It kind of begs, you know, where are we going here? What are we talking about? And Dan Bonner, I do take some solace in that Dan says, hey, easy now. We're still a really good league, right? And there's a lot of positives to pull from here, but we got a volatile transfer portal. We've got legendary coaches. But we got to get back on the solid footing that we have that expectation for, right? And, yeah, 2 years ago when the last time we staged one of these, Virginia won it. And they've been champions in 15, 17, and 19. But you want that confidence. You want that kind of instilled value, if you will. And right now, I'm not sure we got it. And that's one of those things we'll have to keep an eye on in the offseason.
Well, it's been so long since we've been in this position. I say we now as a league, right? I'm speaking now on behalf of the league. Fans, coaches, players, broadcasters, media. You got it from this, you know, all the way from Syracuse down to Miami. You know, no Elite Eight team since 2014. I mean, it's 7 years of us always having somebody to talk about this time of year. You know, first losing season in the NCAA tournament since 1987. I mean, nobody else comes close to having it. I mean, we've gone now 41 consecutive years having somebody in the Sweet 16, which is a crazy number. But you know what? The ACC in basketball has always been crazy. As far as success,
right?
As far as winning the national championship, as far as teams in the Final Four, as far as Elite Eights and Sweet 16s and bids, and it's what we do in the ACC. So all of a sudden you get to this particular year coming off and we didn't have a tournament, so we now kind of go back-to-back years where all of a sudden it's kind of empty around the Elite Eight. But we're not used to that around these parts. Mm. We're not. And like I said, I think we're spoiled rotten, quite frankly, that you're just so used to it. And it's not like, hey, there's just one team and they're always in it and they always win it. No, I mean, Duke won it in 15, right? Carolina took care of business in 17, had a shot in 18. Virginia won it in 19. We're used to spreading the wealth.
Yep.
We've seen Maryland win a national championship. Cuse, even before they joined the league, won a national title. Louisville, before joining the league, won the national. We're used to talking basketball and having people of note win national titles and being in the hunt, in the conversation.
Yep.
This particular year, and we knew during the season, based on what the AP poll looked like, and we mocked all that stuff, and, hey, you got to be kidding me. You don't think Florida State's not one of the top 16 teams? You know what? This is why March Madness is great, because no matter what you're seeded, no matter how many teams you get in, hey, this is where we keep score. And right now, for the ACCs, I said in hour one, we got great legendary coaches. We have incredible programs. We got more banners than anybody, but we got to get to work. And the only way you get to work is get better players. And given this transfer portal,
no question,
totally different universe. You know that the blue bloods are going to still recruit really good high school players, but the transfer portal, I think you're seeing the kind of impact it can have on a program very quickly when a coach and their staff head on swivel, figure out that guess what? I can pluck this guy, this guy, this guy. I've got experience. I can stay old and they fit with what we want to do. The guys that do the best job can have immediate success. Immediate success. So that's why it's an interesting time.
Yeah, no doubt. The disappointment, though, is still there for both Florida State and Syracuse over the weekend. And we'll start with the Noles yesterday, who it just didn't go well. Turnovers, which had kind of been a storyline, a little bit of Florida State in the postseason. Their inability to shoot the ball from distance had been a storyline really since entering the NCAA tournament. And you couldn't have that against a talented team like Juwan Howard's Michigan bunch yesterday. And it proved to be basically that. And Michigan got 50 points in the paint, which seems impossible against Florida State. But yesterday, they did. They had allowed 32 points in the paint in their first two ball games. And yesterday, they just let Michigan go to work around the basket, and the Wolverines took advantage of it. 76-58 was the final. Here's a look at the way it's set up. Michigan 85% from the floor in the paint, 34 points in the second half, 77% of their field goal attempts, 11 of 13 layups. Florida State had a brief glimmer, but then a 21-7 Michigan run basically salted it away, and the Wolverines were winners yesterday and, quite frankly, made it look easy too, Pac.
It was easy. I mean, Florida State got it within five. Like you said, the 21-7 spurt, good night, thing was over. But the Noles' inability to make shots from the three line was kind of perplexing. I mean, they were the best in the conference, one of the best in the country. Didn't make one in game one against UNCG. Had zip at halftime as of yesterday, until they made a couple back-to-back threes and cut it from 11 to 5. And I think it was 41-36. You didn't even see a sign of life of, hey, what was going on here? So, just, again, I think you got to give Michigan a ton of credit. They just outplayed them, outworked them inside. And given the Noles' size, you just didn't think teams could go inside like that and have such great success. But they did. And when you only score 58, which was your lowest offensive point total of the year, and you give up half 100 in the paint, Wes, that's a recipe for disaster there, my man. I don't care what you're seated, where you're playing, what day of the week it is. That's going to be a loss. And unfortunately for the Noles, that's the way it ended. And but I still have faith in Leonard Hamilton. I think their program's out of sight. He's going to get dudes, and they'll come back after it again next year, and they'll be really, really good. I have no doubt about that. So disappointing day, though. Disappointing way for it to end. A weird year, like I said earlier. Didn't win the ACC regular season. Didn't win the ACC tournament. Didn't get to the Final Four. You know those were all on the board before the season started. And the Noles will go 0-3.
Yep.
Difficult. Tough year. Good team, but a tough year.
No doubt. The Magic ran out for 11-seed Syracuse as well against Houston. Looked like the teetering started very early. Orange scrambled back into it, tied at 20-all. And then the Cougars went on a 10-0 run to end the first half, led by 10 at the break. And in the second half, Syracuse – you know, was able to get it to a three-possession, two-possession situation, but not much closer than that. And the Cougars end up winning 62-46. The storyline becomes the Orange, who had been so proficient from the floor shooting the ball, especially Buddy Boeheim, didn't really have that at all as a measuring stick for themselves the other night. And that's the disappointing part for Syracuse, to see it end like that. The fact they shot it so well in the first two ball games, only to see it end in just a flicker at Hinkle Fieldhouse the other night against Houston.
Syracuse, 46 points. That's the lowest offensive output since Dirt in the NCAA tournament for Syracuse. And, you know, listen, you're not going to beat anybody in this tournament with a 46 spot. And Buddy Boeheim had a tough night. And again, I think this is where you give credit to the other guy. You know, give Houston credit. They imposed their will, the way they like to play defense, attack, physical, in your face. And they made everything difficult for Syracuse. There was nothing easy.
Right.
And when Cuse can't shoot the basketball, given their style, that is a problem. And that was certainly a problem against the Cougs, the number two seed, as they move on. So, tough weekend for the guys now. No question. I thought both had a fighter's chance if they played well. But, you know, really, to be honest with you, Syracuse and Florida State did not play well. And you give credit to Houston and Michigan, and the ACC, like I said, has to get back to work.
Yeah. Buddy Boeheim, by the way, had two really good games to start the NCAA tournament. And then, unfortunately, a difficult night at the end against Houston. However, on March the 29th, I will say this. He's going to be on my preseason All-ACC first team in the fall. You can just go ahead and write it down. He is a tremendous player. And if he gets even marginally better than he has his first 2 years, 3 years back, he's going to be as good a player as this league has next fall.
Wes, let me ask you a question. I don't know if this is going to become a new segment on the show moving forward, but I'm going to throw something on you. Who had a worse weekend? Who had a worse weekend? I'm going to give you three choices.
Okay.
You ready? A.
Yeah.
The USA men's soccer team, which failed to make the Olympics.
Don't even.
Again. Oh. Since 08.
Did we lose to, like, Honduras?
Bangladesh.
We lost to
Bangladesh A&M or somebody we lost to. So the USA. So you got to guess, all right? I'm going to give you three choices. Who had a worse weekend? USA men's soccer team. We're not going anywhere for Japan. B, the captain and crew of Ever Given, which is the container ship that decided just to do parallel park in the Suez Canal and backed everything up.
And apparently I read somewhere we now got a toilet paper problem as a result.
We're going to have all kinds of problems because of that. That I can assure you. Or C, the ACC men's Sweet 16 efforts. Who had the worst weekend, A, B, or C? Soccer, captain, or ACC men's basketball? Who had the worst weekend?
I'm going to go with that cat driving that boat, dude.
I don't know. I don't know if I can answer that one. You know why? Because I think they finally got the boat moving forward this morning. So at least they're not
stuck.
Okay. Well, everybody else, I think, stuck. Our men's teams got stuck. They're not going anywhere now. And our soccer program's been stuck since 08.
Soccer? What are we doing?
Let the ladies handle it. Seriously, let the ladies handle it.
I think we
business.
Need to. By the way, I like the idea of creating that on Mondays in the spring.
You like that?
Who had the worst weekend? Well, put it on social media. Let that social media group handle that. Vote it.
All right, I'll come up with the topics, and then we'll put it on social media. But those are your three.
Social media picks.
Because everybody on Monday's like, I can't believe it's Monday. Everybody hates Mondays. Oh, Mondays stink. Well, we'll give that to you then. Who had the worst weekend? All right, A, B, or C? There you go. Who's your three choices?
Perfect guest is next. If you can't tell, I got this thing during the NCAA tournament where I don't think the finality of this is really understood unless you're there. Well, Muffet McGraw has been there for the finality at both ends of the spectrum. And we're going to talk to her about it. From a Louisville side where they move on and from an NC State side where you pack the bags and fly home. We'll talk to Coach next. Looking forward to it on Monday's Packer and Durham right after this.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Monday, 844-SAY-ACCN, the number. There have been better Mondays, I got to tell you. There have been better Mondays on the show.
Yeah.
We've had better Mondays.
No question.
But nevertheless,
all right.
Bring on Coach here to talk about at least a positive. We found a positive with Louisville taking care of business.
Yeah.
Muffet McGraw joins us. Coach, good morning. How are you?
Morning, guys.
We all right? We surviving?
I had a great weekend. I'm glad I wasn't in one of those three. There were some tough choices out there, but I would have gone with men's soccer.
Men's soccer. I said, let's let the ladies handle it. You know what? The ladies are good. The men are just, I don't know what the men are doing, but the ladies got it figured out.
Yeah, I got that part. Coach, I want to do something here that's a little unique. And because you can speak to this, and I got issues with the tournament because the finality of this, I don't think people really understand. And years ago, my dad said something to me when he was still doing the games at Carolina on the radio and they got beat. And he said, you know, at times, I don't think people really understand it's a winner's event in the NCAA tournament, men or women. The winners are moved on to this stage and the losers are just kind of shuttled off to the corner and off you go back to your campus or whatever the case may be. And from that point forward, I've always thought about the finality of it for the team that doesn't advance. You've been both ends. You've won the thing. You know what it's like to ride the winning wave. But at the same time, I have this spot for the teams that have the end and it doesn't go the way the script's supposed to, that you have to process it. So for a Wes Moore and a Jeff Walls, in the span of 24 hours, we see those ends of the spectrum, right? And that's, I don't think the general fan, even the most ardent fan of a school, I'm not sure they process it or understand how difficult that spectrum is sometimes.
Well, not only do they not understand, but I don't think they can even relate to it. I know I still remember in 2010, we lost to Oklahoma in the game to go to the Elite Eight in a game that came down to overtime, you know, a couple decisions, and I'm still not over that one. So they stay with you, and the loss like Wes had over this weekend, when you're a number one seed especially, and you lose early before the Final Four, it's going to haunt you. I mean, it's going to keep you up at night. It's going to haunt you for the entire year until you can get back out there and play another game. And it's just brutal. And the thing that probably amazed me the most was, even when we got to the Final Four and lost, I did not get a single note from somebody saying, great season. I didn't get anybody saying like, oh, wow, we made it to the Final Four. Isn't that awesome? It's like, you lost, and that's a shame. You should have won, you know? And so I think this society in general, like, we love winners, and that is all we want to talk about.
Coach, you know, when you're the head coach, a lot of times you get a lot of praise. A lot of times people get on your case and say, hey, woulda, coulda, shoulda. And you mentioned a game like that haunting Coach Moore for a while until they get back in action and getting cranked up again. A lot of folks have made a big deal out of the timeout with 13 seconds to go in a game, and it's easy to play the 2020 hindsight game, but they didn't lose the game because of that timeout. You know, the second and the third quarter, when that they went from a comfortable lead to all of a sudden playing catch up, and you know, now all of a sudden when you don't have Kayla Jones, that's when it really kicks in. But people are going to make a big deal out of that timeout with 13 seconds. When you watched the game yesterday, what was going through your head from a coaching perspective?
Yeah, and you're exactly right. I mean, we lost the national championship. We had a chance at the free throw line, missed the free throw, lost by one. And everybody said, oh my gosh, if she would have made the free throw. And I said, what about the free throw that was missed in the first quarter? Yeah. What about the turnovers that we had? What about the times we didn't get the rebound? There's so many things. It is never what happens at the end of the game. It's why did you put yourself in this position? And you're exactly right. Those middle quarters were terrible. They just couldn't get anything going offensively. And Indiana just drove the ball. They got layups. They took them off the dribble in the half court. They went in transition. Their defense was just really poor. And I really think that Kayla Jones, she's a big key for them. I mean, she's going to get you 10 rebounds. She's going to make a big shot. She's going to step over and be the defensive weak side help. So all those things they didn't have. And now their bench, which was not strong all year long, except for the sixth man of the year, who's now in the starting lineup. So I don't think it came down to that last possession either. I mean, they could have executed a little bit better. You know, you want to just go in, and it's always a big decision. You know, do you just go for the two? Do you go for the three? And the way they were shooting the ball, I mean, you know, they had to go inside. But really, there wasn't anybody I was thinking, who do you want to give the ball to? Because really, Boyd, I thought, played pretty well. But other than that, there weren't a lot of choices.
Coach, here's the other thing, too. We watched two teams bow out in the Sweet 16, and yet you have different feelings about the way their season ended. One, NC State, obviously a top seed. And then you have Georgia Tech, who, and I said this earlier, the job Nell Fortner's done there in 2 years is remarkable. I mean, Georgia Tech's had moments in women's basketball. They haven't had any kind of stability or continuity like Nell's brought to that program in 2 years. Yet you feel differently about NC State and Georgia Tech today than maybe they would want you to. You feel they went the same route, but you feel differently about it.
Well, yeah, because they overachieved. They were a five seed and they got to the Sweet 16. They weren't supposed to get that far. So they did a little bit more than everybody expected them to. And it's really, it all comes down to those expectations. When you're the number one seed, man, the pressure is on. And Louisville, as a two seed, they're in that same position. They did what they were supposed to do. And then you start playing with house money and you're like, wow, we can relax and have a good time. The pressure's kind of off and you can enjoy it. And you saw how well Georgia Tech played against a great South Carolina team. game. I mean, they were right there throughout the game. So I think you do have a different feeling. Georgia Tech, a team that hadn't been in the tournament in a while. Nell has done a fabulous job. I mean, she turned that program around. And she's so positive in a year when everything is going wrong. And you look at her on the sideline and you just always hear and see her body language and know that she is just so upbeat and optimistic about this team.
Muffy, you know what else is great in sports? When the moment's the biggest and the best players step up and say, you know what, let's go, right? And sometimes that doesn't happen, but there's nothing better in sports. Right. I don't care. You pick the sport, you pick the level. When the moment's the biggest, and all right, you're supposed to be the best player, prove it. Dana Evans, after having a tough go early, goes for 29. Louisville only scored 60. And boy, did the Cardinals need it? Did the ACC need it after the weekend? But Dana Evans looked like the great player that she is, and she took care of business yesterday. She was terrific.
She really did. Career high in a game to go to the Elite Eight. That's what you want from your superstar, and what pressure she's been feeling. She's had to carry the load for this team. And like you said, she had almost half their points. So they've got to step up and give her a little bit of help. But I'm so happy for Dana to come through and play the way that she played for most of the year. And remember, when she got 20 points, they were going to win. So as soon as they got to 20, I kind of relaxed a little bit and said, I think we're going to have one more team going forward.
All right, Coach, can she carry them all the way? I mean, is this, are we now to the point in the tournament where you can ride the one player?
No, I don't think we are. Stanford is a great team. They're a very balanced team. They're a team with so many players. They've got pretty good depth. They've got size. I mean, they've got 6'7" inside. They've got somebody that can dunk inside. They've got just really good guard play and really good post play. I think the mismatch is going to be because Louisville likes to go with the four-guard lineup. Stanford's a very big team, and I think they're going to have that mismatch inside. And Tara Vandeveer is a pretty good coach. She's been in this game 21 times. And this, to me, is the most pressure game. This is the game that everybody gets a little bit tight because the Final Four is on the line, and it's very similar to the way you feel in the national championship game. So this is a game where you want that experience. Louisville, you know, you think back, Dana's probably the only one that's ever been in this game. Stanford, on the other hand, they've got quite a few players that have had this experience in this particular game.
Muffet, we had Dan Bonner on last hour. And I was bragging about the job, actually, the selection committees did as far as six number one seeds are still alive in the Elite Eight, three in the men, three in the ladies. I asked Dan Bonner, will all three number one seeds on the men's side get to the Final Four? His answer was yes. I'm going to ask you the same question for the ladies. Will all three number one seeds get to the Final Four, yes or no?
Well, my bracket is totally busted. I had Maryland and I have Baylor getting to the Final Four, so I guess we'll see how that turns out. I think Stanford should advance. I also had NC State going, so I don't know how it's going to end up. But, you know, usually in the women's, you can pick the top four teams in January, and it's always going to be the same. And they're going to get there, or, you know, there's going to be a huge upset for them not to get to the Final Four. But this year, we've got some parity. We've had a lot of fun watching games. Every game has been close. It's been exciting. And that's what you want in the tournament. The top eight seeds this year, they all had a chance to win. So it's going to really be interesting to see going forward what happens today and then what happens in the Final Four.
Now, wait a minute. That's the longest yes or no answer I've ever heard. Was that a yes or no?
That's exactly right. That was very coach. That was very, I thought that was very, very, let me just say this. I know you probably missed some of the things of being a head coach, but that was a really nice, indirect, non-direct, non-circumstantial answer to the question that was asked. That was very NCAA press conference, by the way, on your part.
You know what? I was a little bit Notre Dame fencing right there. I was kind of parrying and you know, moving around a little bit. And, you know, we got that national championship team on campus, and they've won 11 national championships, more than anybody. Probably Coach, the rest of us put together.
Coach, we've already pleaded to Jack Swarbrick in hour number one when we did the best and worst of the weekend. We need to get one of those hornet-looking masks down here. We got lacrosse national championships up. You can get this done. I mean, if Swarbrick can't get the deal done, you know people there. Yeah. We've got to get one of those fencing masks down here in the basement. So put that on your to-do list. Right, we expect more.
Okay.
Expect
more. And you're going to wear it on camera.
I will wear it on camera.
Oh,
I
promise you. Oh, it's going to be worn.
Given. You kidding? I'm in.
I hope it has a big ND on it.
That's it. Got it.
Well, here's the other thing, Coach. If they're willing to find the suit that's big enough for Pac, he'll put the whole deal on.
The only problem is I might look like the Michelin man with a hornet's head walking around with that whole outfit. It's the only problem.
Oh, me. Hey, Muffin, thank you as always.
Wait a minute.
No, she'll get that. Are you kidding?
Wait a minute. Muffin, I'm taking that as all three number ones is a no since you had Baylor in the Final Four.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, Connecticut looked really good.
Oh, no, really good the other day.
So no. Now I got to hedge my bets.
That's a no. I got it.
Look here, Pac. Make no mistake. We're counting on Coach here for two things. One, we're counting on tremendous insight and coaching perspective when it relates to the finality of the NCAA tournament. She's given us that. Number two, she's going to deliver a fencing mask for you. And that is going to put her over the top on this program. All this nothing but net stuff and all the other stuff that goes on, all that stuff's fine. Sports Center hits, all that other jazz. She gets the fencing mask. She goes to the top of the Packer and Durham legend.
I tell you what, you're throwing a sword in that thing. You put a sword in there, we're in business. You give me a sword and a hornet's
sword.
Mask, I'm in.
I'd love to see that get through the mail.
What are we doing? Thanks, Coach. Well done.
Just load up the Winnebago, fill it up with gas, and come on down to Charlotte. We got plenty of room for you to park out here. You and the dogs will get along great.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. I'll bring ice cream.
Oh, great.
Well, I'll deliver
great.
The ice cream.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks.
I'll deliver the ice cream.
Thanks, Coach. Have a great week.
Thanks, you guys.
Unbelievable.
You too.
Enough at McGraw. Unbelievable. Thank you so much. When we come back, we'll go to Tiger Town. John Rittman. Clemson Duke had a fantastic weekend of ACC softball. We'll catch up with the coach of the Tigers. This is going along pretty good for year 1.5 of Clemson softball, wouldn't you say, Pac?
Oh, yeah.
We'll talk to Coach coming up next.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham. A Monday. 844-SAY-ACCN. All right, we got a homework assignment for Muffet McGraw. We'll see if she can't come up with the Saber.
Oh, jeez. Dude, that is a layup. That is a layup. That's a layup.
We'll see if Muffet gets the job done on that front.
We're talking about Muffet McGraw getting a fencing mask for you.
And a saber. Saber. I want the saber with that, too.
I got a bigger issue in the final segment for you as it relates to fencing.
All right, fair enough.
We'll deal with that in the last segment.
Let's talk softball.
Let's go to Tiger Town. John Rittman, friend of the show, head softball coach at Clemson, joins us. Some kind of four-game series with Duke over the weekend. Saturday, Sunday, we're right here on ACC Network. Coach, congratulations on getting the back end. That was high level all weekend. That's kind of what you sign up for, I guess, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's two great teams going at it. We lost the first two games on Friday in a doubleheader and loved the way our team came back and competed and won the last two games. But as a fan, if you watch it on TV or if you're fortunate enough to be here live, just great fast pitch softball all weekend. Hats off to both teams. Just a great series and a lot of fun.
Coach, I just said to you during the break, the only thing missing, and I know we couldn't have it, but the only thing missing in that series was if we didn't have the pandemic. Can you imagine the crowds? I mean, as fired up as people are for softball and what you built in such a short period of time, and you got one team with a 17-game winning streak, another one with an 18-game winning streak, that would have been insane in Tiger Town if under that scenario. It was still great, split a four-game series both ways, but that was the only thing missing that would have made it perfecto.
Well, yeah, I agree, Mark. And you know, what's amazing is we had, I think, officially announced 372 people there, and the atmosphere was still electric. I mean, those 372 were making as much noise as if it was sold out, it seemed like, at times during that game, especially to close out the series yesterday. But, yeah, it's just unfortunate, but you know, we count our blessings. We're happy to be playing, and playing at a high level against a great team. And you know, like I said, during the pandemic, you just take what you get and feel grateful for it.
Coach, let's go to the concepts here of what we're seeing, though. We're seeing these four-game series. I mean, you had Duke at Clemson this weekend, North Carolina scheduled to visit for four this week. You're 22-4. I jokingly said to break, it's like season 1.5 for Clemson softball. We're in this kind of deal where spring sports has been reshuffled, and yet we were just talking about this with women's basketball earlier, where you got two national teams, Louisville and NC State, who've helped the rest of the league. We know Florida State's been good for a long time. Now it looks like the rest of the league. I mean, you're 22-4. You're having a really, really good year. But I get the sense that the rest of the league is moving well up the chain, too. This is not just a singular moment for you. It's everybody's taking advantage of these improvements, if you will, as softball reconvenes.
Yeah, no question at all. I mean, if you look at our conference top to bottom, every team has improved. Even the teams that, you know, have been in the lower half of the conference, they're better, you know. And in fast pitch softball, like baseball, I mean, a lot of it deals with your pitching. You got to have a strong pitching staff, and especially us going from a 3-game to a 4-game series this year. I mean, it's still a game where if you don't have pitching, it makes it tough to win. But if you look at our league, our conference, every team has improved. You know, certainly with two new teams in Clemson and Duke, you know, playing at a high level right now, it's boosted the conference. And, you know, you have your schools that have been traditionally, you know, powerhouses in Florida State, Virginia Tech, North Carolina, you know, but North Carolina State, Louisville, all of these teams in our league, like I said, have improved. So, it makes for interesting weekends. It bodes well for the conference on the national scene, and I think you'll see it pay dividends in postseason.
Coach, were the cartwheels part of the contract? I'm just asking. Was that negotiated?
I'm going to clarify this. I'm going to clarify this because I got lit up on Twitter last night. That was our associate head coach, Jameson, not me. He did it much better than I would have executed that cartwheel. I'll tell you that right now.
How'd that get started, by the way?
You know, last year I think we had a big series win, and our sports performance coach, Metzger, is a gymnast, and she did a flip, and we got a couple other kids that can do some flips. And you know, I mean, with this age, you dance when you win, like the football team. So we certainly want to partake in some good times after big wins. And it's fun to see our team enjoy it and embrace it and do some crazy stuff.
Well, I want to tell you, it's fun to see spring sports getting the opportunity to celebrate, Coach. I mean, let's be honest. We were talking to Manny Diaz. This is a lot better than what we were going through a year ago, right?
No question. And it's like I said earlier, we're so grateful. And our medical staff and the people that have to get us on the field to play have done a phenomenal job. You know, and certainly there's setbacks, and we've had some players that have been out because of COVID related stuff. And you know, you really got to pinch yourself and take it one day at a time and just be grateful that we're playing the game that we love.
I was kidding around with you before the break because I was catching the tail end yesterday between basketball and stuff. Cagle comes in to close it out, and, man, there's enough 3-2 counts. I tell you what, if I saw another 3-2 count, I was going to go order another donut or 10. And it'll drive a coach crazy, those 3-2 counts. But, boy, she has been great, not only pitching but also hitting the softball, right? I mean, she's really been all-purpose, all-world terrific.
Yeah, I was telling Patrick, our media relations person here, that, man, she's worth the price of admissions. I mean, she can do it all. I mean, this weekend she hit for power. She drove in runs. She pitched phenomenally in the circle. We put her in the outfield, and they have Deja Davis on second base, their fastest player, and fly ball to right, and she gets an assist and throws her out at third. I mean, she's just phenomenal and so happy she's a Clemson Tiger, I'll tell you that. But, yesterday in that ninth inning, you know, we got 9-1-2 coming up. And Jacobson, their three-hole hitter, is just eating us up all weekend. So we didn't want to have to pitch to her. Well, Kegel goes 0-2 on their nine hitter and then walks her on four straight. So here we go, you know. But she buckled down and came in. And the last out of the game was just a bang-bang play at first. So a lot of high stress in that last inning. But that's what fast-pitch softball is. It's a quick, you know, fast-paced game. And Valerie, just phenomenal. Like you said, she's worth the price of admission.
All right, John, what's the story on 72 as a jersey number, though? There's got to be something there, right?
There is, and she asked me when we recruited her if she could wear, you know, a different type of number, I guess, 72. I said, I don't care what number you want. You can wear whatever you want. And she goes, well, I want to wear 72. And I said, well, is there a reason why you want 72? And she goes, yeah, well, I always wanted to hit 72 on the radar gun, you know, and I think she's accomplished that feat a couple times this year. So that's the story behind 72.
You know what? I thought you were going to tell me because the softball field is built where the old golf team used to hit golf balls. That
oh, geez,
72
here we go
was the even par magic number back in my day. Of course, kids go shoot 64 today. I thought 72, you're going to give me a little, Pat, we still got divots down that third baseline story. I was waiting for that one, but I guess not.
Well, yeah, you know, it's not, but, you know, it's my day off today, so I'm hoping to hit the bell for a little golf this
there
afternoon and enjoy this good weather. And we still chip out here in Jervey Meadow now. It's a good place to kind of get your chipping game under control.
Well, are you going to play the Walker course? Or are you going to Boscobel? Where are you going today?
I love them both. Today I'm going to the Bell.
Right.
Yeah, it's my type of golf out there.
Now remember, I'll just tell you one bit of advice about Boscobel. I take this from my days of playing at Clemson. Don't hit it left of the green on number two because there's bamboo and out of bounds on the left. I'm just going to tell you that right now. That bamboo on two is a problem. I'm just going to tell you that right now.
I've been there many times, and they're building houses over there now. Yeah. They're building some houses over there. So
But
I've been in that bamboo.
Yeah, I have too. It's not pleasant. No,
this is the part of the program where I need to remind Coach Rittman that Packer has not attempted a swing competitively in 23 years.
23.
Right, Pac?
24.
Yeah.
No, 24.
24, sorry. Well, 24, yeah. Gigi just turned 24.
He's going to pick up some fencing and maybe get back on the course.
Yeah, fencing. Yeah. You stay tuned for the tail end of the show, Coach. I'm going to tell you why the fencing thing ain't going to happen. I'm getting ready to tell you. I got some keen research as to why the fencing's not happening. But, hey, John, thanks as always for the time. Big series with North Carolina. Home series for the Tigers at McWhorter starts on Thursday. We always appreciate the time. Look forward to following your group the rest of the spring.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. Go Tigers.
You got it. Keep it in short grass.
You bet.
Keep it out of that bamboo. You'll be all right.
Yeah, Boscobel out of the bamboo at two.
Yeah.
At Boscobel.
Boscobel
International there.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, right there on the highway. Notre Dame and Florida State. By the way, big four-game series coming up this weekend, and we've got it for you right here on ACC Network. You can watch ACC softball all season long. Irish and Knowles is Friday at 4 from Tallahassee, and it's always streaming for you on the ESPN app. We have some top plays of the weekend, and some late research has just come in regarding fencing that we're going to need to share with you. And we will do that when we continue on a busy, what has turned into a busy Monday here, Packer and Durham on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham, final segment of a Monday, show number 351, if anybody's keeping score. Terrific guest as always.
I missed a whole boatload of them. I missed a whole boatload of shows.
That's all right. You're back now. You're good to go.
Missed 350. I was disappointed.
Put some dirt on it. You'll be all right.
All right. Yeah. You ready for top plays?
Great ones, too. These are all good.
Yeah. Well, we waited to the end to bring the good news, didn't we?
Yep.
We had a bunch of bad news this weekend. Let's go baseball. Ryan Cole walks it off for Notre Dame. That's a shot. That I don't even have to know where it lands.
See, that these unis are much better than the all greens. Just saying. The all greens, I got to work on the all greens. Those are sweet. You can live with those.
Are you telling?
Tell you what, man.
You're telling Notre Dame how to dress now? That's
I'm
good.
I'm just telling you, Notre Dame wearing the all greens. I'm not. I tell you what, they have been a great story. How about this dude? Every week, JHM, every week. Every week he's making plays on here. Boy, he is sensational, man. Baller. Here's a laser beam. That's yours. Get in front of that thing. Good luck. Goodness gracious.
Doing the Duke Spring Showcase. He put the 2-0 jersey on Lamar, the robot. Look at this. This is some of that exclusive coaching video.
Bam.
Watch this. Bam.
Roddy got better speed, though.
By the
Let
way.
Let me tell you something. Roddy's got better speed now.
One of Roddy's former teammates took to social media after this happened. Cedric Griffin, linebacker for the Jackets, said, "It's the only time Duke ever tackled you, Roddy." Wow.
How about that?
Wow.
How about that?
Wow.
Roddy's got better speed than that dummy said, now.
By the way, more on Roddy Jones later in the week with some of the things that Roddy went through to get on the air this weekend. Little home improvement during the Saturday Spring Showcase. We'll have to show that to you, by the way. Actually, we went DIY during the show, Pack.
Nice.
Maybe not his best effort.
It's all right.
Put a shelf in during
the
show.
It's spring. You don't have to be great till the fall. It's spring.
All right. Late research has come in. If you haven't been with us, Notre Dame won the fencing national championship this past weekend. All right. And my partner thought that it would be an excellent opportunity to add to the national championship basement collection of Packer and Durham. Lars Tiffany has sent us an autographed lacrosse helmet. We've gotten the hockey sweaters from Jerry York.
Right.
We've gotten a piece of the floor from Tony Bennett.
Field hockey sticks.
I mean, we've done a pretty good job.
Field hockey sticks from Karen Shelton.
Field hockey sticks from Karen Shelton, yeah. Actually, Aaron Mattson got us the second one because I think Karen was going to leave us off the list.
Dan Radakovich
there's the champagne from.
Yeah, Dan Radakovich hooking us up on liquor after another Clemson National Championship football.
There you go. So, it's come to our attention that Packer now wants a fencing mask from the University of Notre Dame.
Yep, that's what I want.
And it also has come to our attention that Packer would potentially want the whole getup.
How about the saber?
Now, I don't know if we have. We want the saber or the foil.
Whatever.
But I don't know if we have the video of the fencing readily available to where we can show you said getup. There is a uniform for this.
Yeah, you look like a Michelin. Yeah. I look like the Michelin man if I got one of these bad boys.
Well, and that kind of begs the question because our crack research staff has gone and gotten the measurables for fencers at the 2016 Olympics.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Now, here is the average male fencer's dimensions.
All right, go for it.
6 feet tall.
I'm taller than that.
176 pounds.
Hold on a second. I'm a little Whoa. Higher than that. I'm a little bigger than that.
A little north of 176.
Yeah.
We know you're north of 6 feet.
That's right.
The BMI, the body mass index on the fencer, is about 23%.
I'm higher than that. I'm definitely higher
than
that.
How you doing on that?
I'm way higher than that.
Definitely higher than that? Okay. Yeah.
In fact, I'll tell you what. I had an order of barbecue this weekend that weighed more than 176 pounds. Affects me. You just send me the get up and let me try. Listen, I already tried Will Sweeney's jersey. You saw how that worked out. I said it looked like a boa eating a goat.
Yeah,
I'm Michelin man at the national title thing. Just bring me the get up. Bring me the saber, the Hornets mask. Get this bad boy done, baby. Another natty for the ACC.
Well, Muffet McGraw, I have no doubt in my mind that there'll be something in the mail to you because Muffet McGraw gets the job done.
Hey, by the way.
That's all I'm saying.
Before we get out of here today, how about some positive news?
Yeah.
How about 39 years ago today? 39 years ago today, yeah. Dean E. Smith won his first natty. How about that?
Thrown away to Worthy.
Thrown away to Worthy. BPI Ives. That 39 years ago today, North Carolina beat Georgetown. How about that? Classic.
Jordan jumper from out on the left.
That's it. Good having you back,
Miami
Western.
Pro Day coming up at 1 o'clock. Thank you, Packer. It's good to be back. Thanks, everybody, for a great day. We'll see you tomorrow morning here on Packer and Durham.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.